Have you ever wondered how the world might end? I've got to admit that this is something I do worry about. I have done since I was small. Good thing is, though, a three-part series on RN Science Friction will answer this question by exploring three catastrophic natural disasters, looking at whether they could destroy life on Earth and how prepared we are for these disasters. ABC science journalist Carl Smith created this series for Science Friction. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Erica. How are you going?
Good. Many people kind of file the apocalypse under their brain, under way too big, somebody else's problem, but not you. What prompted you to tackle the apocalypse?
Well, I'm a science reporter with ABC Science, and I wanted to look at scientifically how common these big natural disasters are that could destroy life on Earth or can significantly change life on Earth. I wanted to look at how deadly they can be and what we as society are doing to prepare for some of these big events.
And it turns out there are a number of ways that that life could end on Earth, or at least humanity could be wiped out. You've looked at three scenarios. One of them is a solar event or a sunstorm. Tell me about this scenario.
So we first learnt about solar flares and solar events like these back in around 1859, when there was a really massive solar event called the Carrington event. And at the time, we noticed some sunspots on the sun. We noticed a bright flash of light across the electromagnetic spectrum. And then a short time later, there was this burst of plasma from the sun that started destroying communications and electricity of the age. There wasn't a lot back then, but telegraph operators were apparently sparked and electrocuted, some were burnt, and we had these massive failures of some of those early prototype systems that we now in society rely on quite heavily. And so there are space weather forecast centres around the world, including one here in Sydney, run by the Bureau of Meteorology, and they're keeping an eye out for any of these bursts from the sun that could destroy grids and communications. And what I found quite interesting in this is that even though, sure, that's not an apocalyptic situation, you're not going to see people losing their life if there's a burst from the sun like this. When you start to lose a lot of those systems that prop up modern societies, like communication systems and GPS, like electricity grids, and when you see catastrophic failures across those networks that can take weeks or even longer to be fixed, then what happens? And so I just wanted to kind of look at how often these happen. And the expert I talked to on this said once every 100 or 200 years, you're going to have one of those massive events. Mm. And then what happens in that instance? And there's not a lot that we can do. We have a bit of warning ahead of time. But if those grids are knocked out and we lose some of the big transformers, the big core parts of electricity grids, or if we lose satellites, that takes a long time to reestablish.
Everyone's totally reliant now on GPS, and I feel like people need to go out and buy map books, you know, just in case.
Well, I did a slot with ABC Sydney just the other day, and we had someone ring up saying that that's why they hold on to their old map books as well.
Mm. And another possibility that I think a lot of people think about, but they also consign it to kind of science fiction, it's the asteroid strike hitting Earth. So that's a possibility that you looked at. But I guess what pops into my mind, isn't NASA kind of watching the sky pretty intently for, you know, those random hunks of rock?
Yeah, since 1998, we've had a worldwide network called the Near Earth Observations Network. And this is a project that was set up to keep an eye out for any big objects that are headed our way. And we found lots of them through this network, but there are still many others that NASA has not found. And I actually talked to NASA's Planetary Defense Officer. Yes, that is a job title. It's the most amazing job title I think I've ever heard. And he was telling me about the numbers of mid-size asteroids from 100 meters to a kilometer across. And he said that there's still a lot of those to find.
And the numbers down to 100 meters in size are probably an order of 25,000. We have found about 8,000 of those so far in the 20 years that we've been doing this, about one third. So we have a ways to go there. At our current rate, we will still be searching in the 2050s to try to find all these objects.
NASA Planetary Defense Officer Lindley Johnson there. So what's the situation with funding for programs that scan the skies for these possible asteroid strikes?
Yeah. Well, I think I should probably mention as well that the asteroids that size, between 100 meters and a kilometer across, they can still cause some pretty catastrophic damage. So it's worth finding the other two-thirds of those asteroids that we haven't spotted yet. And yes, in terms of the worldwide network that we have that NASA runs, there are several tracking stations around the world, and some of them are not related to NASA as well. We have asteroid tracking stations set up outside of NASA. But we had three main sites around the world, and one of them was actually in Australia, the Siding Springs Observatory in New South Wales. And in around 2013, it was actually defunded through some NASA funding cuts. And I talked to a researcher here at the ANU who believes that after that funding cut, that's left us blind to the southern skies. So roughly 50% of the sky is not being looked at when it comes to, you know, giant asteroids that could come our way. He says that the analogy is like, well, why can we see the Southern Cross here in Australia, but not in the Northern Hemisphere? It's because we have access to all this other sky. And I talked to Lindley Johnson, our Planetary Defense Officer, about that, and he said that, yes, we do have a gap in our ground-based network, but NASA also has a space-based telescope, which helps to detect asteroids coming from any part of the sky. But at the moment, you know, we are in this interesting situation where we're tracking down these asteroids. We haven't found all of them yet. And as we just heard, we'll still be looking into the 2050s. And one of our big tracking stations here on the ground in Australia was shut down. And we're often, you know, leaning on people like amateurs. And I talked to an amateur in the series on RN Science Friction who has found one of these really enormous, potentially hazardous asteroids, and from his own backyard telescope had to report this asteroid to the authorities, and they checked it and made sure it wasn't going to collide with us. And so the expert I talked to at the ANU, he said we had probably a little bit too reliant on amateurs for tracking what could be really catastrophic things.
Oh, well, I think we should still call on all amateurs to keep on watching the skies for us because, you know, someone's got to do this. The third option you looked at was a super volcano event. What's the scenario here?
So super volcanoes, they probably scare me the most out of these three options that we looked at. And I think the reason why I find them quite threatening is that, first and foremost, they happen quite regularly. So if we're talking massive, the largest scale volcanic eruptions, the researchers I talked to for this series said that that happens once every 20,000 years, which sounds like a very long time. But given, you know, asteroids are hitting, you know, in the order of like millions of years, and the largest solar events aren't as destructive, when you look at 20,000 years and the level of destruction from a supervolcano, which is plunging the world into a supervolcanic winter, often you're seeing temperature changes of tens of degrees or even more for quite a long period of time. The people that I talked to for this series, the experts, volcanologists, they all said if we had one of those today, we would see, you know, massive climate change, we would see failure to crop systems, we don't know what sort of effect that would have on communication systems and everything else that props up modern society. And again, like, I don't want to be too much of an alarmist in this instance because, you know, these are things that we can prepare for and that we do have plans to deal with, and it's unlikely that we're going to see the absolute end of the world.
And that was ABC science journalist Carl Smith joining us to talk about his new series on Science Friction with Natasha Mitchell about the apocalypse. And the good thing is that Carl Smith managed to speak to a wide range of people, including someone who's a prepper. Now, preppers are people who prepare for the apocalypse. Carl Smith spoke with Nick Sayes, who runs the group Australian Preppers. And Nick showed Carl some of the bunkers in the middle of Sydney that he says he'd use if disaster struck. And so here's Nick Sayes.
I think it all factors into the same thing, where you are losing the world that you once knew. Whether or not it's so apocalyptic that a large slice of the population is gone, whether you've just lost your electricity, whether it's a natural disaster or whether it's a man-made disaster like a war. We take our worst case scenario as being a world war, where you lose everything, whatever you rely on for your day-to-day existence, and then we work our way back from there. So if something smaller was to happen, we're prepared for a lot worse.